I'm Bobby Pruitt, speaking on the title, The Joy of Raising Support. Just to read the blurb about here, they put, you need to raise money to attend Project Impact, a mission trip, or a salary. God loves to provide what we need. Come and learn how to proceed with the best attitude and some practical helps to show how to proceed in a God-honoring way that brings the results as needed. So what I'll do, I'd like to try to go through my material as quickly as possible so we can get to questions. And so I'd have a goal of sort of helping, you know, you individually with kind of the particular reason why you're here. And just as I'm beginning, let me ask you this. How many of you are here because, let me give you the categories, and then I'll ask you. So one would be you're thinking about Project Impact or a short-term mission trip. Second would be you're just more interested more in finding out about going on staff for or doing something that is like 6 months or more, okay? And then C would be some other reason, and then you have to tell me what that is. So first one, you're here because of a short-term trip and you're interested in knowing about that. Raise your hands. Okay. And then how many of you, you're considering maybe a six-month or longer sort of commitment? Ooh, woo! So the majority, okay. And C, some other reason you're here? Okay. You're already on staff, yeah? Already. Great. Sounds good. Okay. Thank you very much. That helps me. I'd like to just start off. I'll pray, and then I want to share my testimony a little bit with you. Father, thank you for this time, and I pray you'd redeem it for your glory. Thank you for the opportunity to speaking of opportunity of speaking here, and would just ask you, Lord, to really use this time for enlighten individuals and help individuals that we might be all that you want us to be, and that money would never be a barrier to the ministry you've called us to. In Jesus' name, amen. I grew up a self-made man, and my dad, I think it was because of my dad put pressure on me. He grew up in the Depression, and he worked really hard. His father was institutionalized for tuberculosis and for 12 years, and he lived in inner city Detroit, and they didn't have much money. And my grandmother ironed clothes for people for a living. Anyway, life was really hard for my father. And I think as a result, he joined the military and had a great career. And during his lifetime, the average income of Americans tripled in terms of their disposable income. And so life was a lot better than in the 30s during the Depression. So, but one thing he did, he put a lot of pressure on me to work hard. So when I was 13, I got my first job, and I felt guilty for waiting that long to get a job. He forged a birth certificate for me when I was 15 so I could have a job as a 16-year-old. I threw newspapers as a 13-year-old, worked real hard. As soon as I could get a motorcycle, I got that and got a bigger paper route. And I kind of like am wired together like my father. I've kind of wired together like when my father spoke these things to me, my temperament was, you're right, I should be, I don't know why I'm not, you know, like why I'm not working harder and better. I didn't let my folks pay for my college. I was a self-made man, so I paid my own way through college, which was not that hard at the time like it is today. Like, it was a lot less expensive to go to community college and then to the University of Oklahoma. So it wasn't that hard to pay for my own college. But I was a giver, not a taker. I remember I supported someone on staff for a ministry, a campus crusade, as a college student, because he asked me. So I thought, of course, I'm a giver. I give, I don't take. So later in my life, when I considered going into the ministry, which I'd never thought, because ministry, those are takers. Ministry people are takers, not givers, and I'm a giver. So I didn't ever want to be a pastor or something like that. I thought, no, I'm a giver. How could I do this? And I figured out I could be a military chaplain, and I'd get a government salary. And so I that's a real job. It's not like a pastor who kind of takes money from church members or something like that. So I thought, I'll be a chaplain in the Air Force. I went to seminary. I taught high school a couple years, then went to seminary. And I thought, I did a chaplain candidate training program, which qualified me to, when I got my seminary degree, to be a chaplain in the Air Force. And I did real well. I had to do 2 years' experience in the denomination before I went aboard full-time as a chaplain in the Air Force. That was cool. I was going to be a military officer, you know, and things like that. I was a reserve officer at the time, having done that chaplain candidate training program. That would just be great. So I had to do 2 years' experience in the denomination. I got a call out of the clear blue from Max Barnett at the University of Oklahoma and said, "Bobby, why don't you come down and interview for a job working at our ministry?" I'd never met Max because I commuted to save money from I was never a part of the ministry at the University of Oklahoma, so even though I attended there. But he'd heard about me probably from our church situation in Fort Worth and heard I might be a good guy to do college ministry. So I went down, interviewed, and it was interesting. I really had this sense that this was for me. Like I could, and this was perfect. I could do my 2 years experience and then go aboard with the Air Force. It was great. So we were eating lunch after the interview, and I was feeling great about it. And I think they were feeling good too. And one of the guys, I think it was Ralph Neighbor Jr., said, "Bobby, you know, raising support isn't that bad either. You know, it's not as bad as some people say." And I said, "Doing what?" And he said, "Wait, you don't know that you have to raise your support to go on staff here?" And everyone at the table just started, including Max, they started laughing because they thought that was funny, that I had no earthly idea that I had to raise my support. So now you understand the reason I told you the beginning about my life is, man, I thought I'd have to endure 2 years of getting kind of church sort of money before I was a military guy, and I was just going to have to eat that. But now I was like having to kind of beg people for money or something. You know what I mean? It was kind of weird. It wasn't a real, and it was very humbling. And there was just this strong sense of, I kind of see the sanguine side of God. I thought God was laughing too, along with those staff members. Ah, you know, because it was great. I was completely set up, and it was awesome. And I thought, this is awesome. I can do this. And God, thank you for humbling me. And dealing with my pride, because I had a spirit of pride when it came to the idea of raising support. And I just knew God was in this, and that this was God's plan for me. And I have to say that in all my years of campus ministry, I was on staff with Max for 5 years, and then I've been at the University of Colorado for 26 years, or 25 and a half years. And that probably my greatest joy has been raising support. That's been probably the thing God's used in my life more than anything else to bring me joy and satisfaction and a rich, full heart. I started off quite the opposite feeling. It is a privilege for me to share this with you in my heart. So the first part of this has to do with some attitude, and I'll try not to take too long with it so we can get down to some of the practicals about raising support. So I'll just go through these quickly. They're written down. If you want to make notes out to the side, you can. The number one, 10 advantages of support raising. Number one, an opportunity to trust God. By far, this is the greatest benefit. Everyone should live by faith, but most people prefer to stay in their comfort zone. Hebrews 11:6 says, "Without faith, it's impossible to please Him. For anyone who comes to God must believe He is, and He's a rewarder of those who seek Him." So God wants us to live by faith. Faith is an active trust in God and His promises. Faith is an active trust in God and His promises. One day I was out at the retreat center in Norman, Oklahoma, and my support was not going that well at the time. I was a little short. And I was just out there kind of crying out to God, "God, would you provide my support?" And I was reviewing my verses. And the next verse I reviewed, and it was really cool. I had a growing family. At that time, I probably had two or three kids. The very next, and I was just really getting some time with the Lord. The very next verse I reviewed, and I think God, you know, God's kind of laughing and setting it up again, I think. Anyway, it's 2 Chronicles 16:9. And it says, "The eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the whole earth, that He may strongly support those whose heart is completely His." And I thought, wow. So I just prayed to ask God if He would help me with my support. And the next verse says, "That He may strongly support those whose heart is completely His." And it was like God said to me, if you will just I'm going to take care of you. It was kind of a comforting verse. I'm going to provide for you. And you have your heart fixed on me. And then you do the work that I have called you to. And, you know, you can be faithful in what I've called you to with raising support also. It doesn't negate that. But there was just this sense from God that he's involved in this. And I should trust him. I should have faith in him. Romans 1:17 says, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. So the righteous man should live by faith. And so, see, we don't only come to Christ by faith, but we live by faith. Every human being who comes to Jesus is required not only to come by faith, but to live by faith. It's just the beginning. It's kind of like a wedding and a marriage. Like you get married, but then you got to live the marriage, right? The wedding's not the end of it. It's just the beginning. And so it is. We live by faith. Number two. So opportunity to trust God was the first one. Number two, prayer support. People likely pray for that in which they have a personal investment. When you raise support and people are actually writing a check to you or donating to you every month, they're more likely to pray for you. Sometimes, you know, you have missionaries with International Mission Board who receive a salary through some impersonal channel. And you know, a lot of people pray for those people. But I believe that people pray more for that in which they personally invest. So that's an advantage. Number three, freedom and opportunity to minister to people in many new ways. And I put there, supporters will often open up their lives to you in a way that others will not. There are a lot of people that maybe live in your community. If they begin to support you financially, they kind of feel like they have a right to share their heart with you. And you actually have an opportunity to minister to them to a degree. And they're a little less comfortable with going even to their pastor. He may be too busy. But if they're giving you money every month, they might open their life up to you, I think, a little bit more. And it's so you can have a ministry in the lives of your supporters. That's a great advantage. There was a man, Mr. Dom, who I aerated his lawn. He was an older generation. I one time started an aerating business, a lawn aerating business. This guy I met, he ended up opening up his life to me and supported me a little bit. I had a real ministry in that guy's life. And he didn't go to church. He tried our church one time and the music was too loud. But I had a great ministry in that guy's life. He helped me financially, so I ended up doing that. It was really cool. Number four, salary is adjustable as needed. In most jobs, salaries are fixed. When you raise your support, you're usually allowed to raise enough money to meet your family's needs without your wives working. If you're a single woman, of course, you don't have a wife, probably, you know. So things like that. But, you know, in our network, basically, most of the wives don't work outside the home. They have a job that's probably more important. That's with the kids, raising the kids. That's not that they can't work. Lots of wives work. In Oklahoma, if you do campus ministry, probably both you and your wife are employed by the Colorado Baptist General Convention so that you can try to get enough money to live. But, man, I can set my own salary pretty much based on my needs. And that's a tremendous advantage because impersonal funding sources often do not have enough money to really do everything they'd like to do for your salary. But if you raise your support, you know, there's greater potential for salary. So like for me, this is my family. By the grace of God, we've been able to, by the grace of God, provide. My wife, you know, she taught elementary school. We got married. And my first son was due a few days after she was supposed to quit teaching the fall semester 1 year. And he was born late. So she made it. And she finished teaching that semester. And then she said, well, maybe I'll go back to work someday. She said later, there's no way I'd leave these kids to go back to work. She said, you bring home the bacon. I'll slice it as thin as we need to. But I ain't working anymore. I got my job taking care of these kids. What part of that do you not understand? I said, I get it. Thank you. I understand. All right. It's been wonderful that she's been there for the kids in a way that I can't be. And I've seen in the fruit of the character of our children. So it's been awesome. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I were in another state. If I were working in another campus, it's likely I wouldn't be able to do that if there was a funding source available. Because I raised my own salary, I can get more. So that's a tremendous advantage. Number five, salary is protected because it's decentralized. There's a friend of mine. He goes, "Can you pray for me? I've been having some panic attacks." He was an engineer. He went to our church and he said he's been having panic attacks. I said, "Barry, what's going on?" He said, "I may lose my job. And that just really scares me." And I went away and I thought, and you know, we prayed and asked God to provide, and we've never had much money extra, you know. But I thought later, well, I can't really lose my job, because if one of my supporters, they may lose their job and quit supporting, but I got all these other supporters. They probably won't all lose their job at the same time. So I'm not like Barry. It's like either I get all my salary or I get none of my salary. I might lose a little bit, but I probably won't lose it all instantly. So, I mean, you know, because your salary is decentralized, coming from many sources, that's an advantage. Number six, the privilege of seeing God provide in amazing ways. I have lots of stories along this line. And I remember one time, gosh, there's so many stories I could tell. Well, I'll tell you one quick one. Because maybe this has to do with attitude too. There was a fellow I worked with, and he was a West Point graduate, and he was now a salesman. He made very good money, and I started an Officers Christian Fellowship group at OU. And so I was looking, because of my military experience, I was looking for someone to help me, and so he volunteered to help me. So we did this Officers Christian Fellowship group together. One day we're taking the box of stuff back to his car. I've got the box in my hand. He walks up to his car and pushes a button. And this was quite a while back. But he pushes a button and all like his car lights up and the rear trunk opens up. And I thought, that is awesome. Look at that car he's got. It was a new car and it was so awesome. And I just went and stuck that box in the back of his car. And I was walking over to my 1980 Pontiac Phoenix, and I'm pressing my keychain, which it didn't have power lock. So, I mean, the keychain was just a regular keychain. Of course, nothing happened. And so I'm opening the door to my old car. And as I was getting in, I said, "I have seven kids. I have seven kids." And so I was like, it was kind of like this thing of, you know what, I may not have a new car, but I got what I like. You know, I'm happy. I was really happy. And I was praying. We had this old van. And I was just glad it had passed emissions, because it failed twice. And in Colorado, you have emissions test, and it finally passed. And I was so grateful to God that it passed. So I was happy. I don't care, you know, about that. So it's interesting, because not long after that, it was interesting. I got a phone call, and it was like, you know, Bobby, this may sound strange, but we would like to buy you and Gail a new car. In fact, we'd like to get you two new cars. And it was very interesting. Part of it, you know, we'd been down in our basement, and I'd been trying to we'd bought this new house, and I had mountains of dirt in my basement because we were digging out the sewer. And so before we could even start building, and the wife had gone down there and seen that, and she just started laughing and crying. It was so funny to her, like, that the poor Pruitts, you know, they're trying to get by, and they get mountains of dirt in their, you know. Anyway, it was cute, but God provided two new cars for us then. A Suburban, which was my dream car. I'd always wanted one. And then another car that was very nice. And it was kind of like later I had this sense of, you know what? It's like God saying, you know, you appreciate your attitude about things. I just want to throw you a bone here. And it was a nice bone, you know. And so here we end up with two new cars. And it's just like the extravagance of God. And God has done so many stories I could tell you. If you ask me sometime, I'll tell you other stories. The idea of seeing God provide in amazing ways is a great thing. My kids own all these stories too. Like, they've seen us live a life of faith as a family. And this is really, they've got strong spiritual souls, and they've lived a life of seeing God's supernatural provision in our humility. Even this has been good.
Number seven, joy that comes from a grateful heart towards supporters who are truly co-laboring with you. And guys, I would cry if I thought too much about these folks that help our ministry, some of them. So I won't. But my heart is knit to their heart because they're providing for us. And in heaven, they will get the reward. Sometimes I'll say, you know what? It's like, Bobby, thank you for all you're doing at CU. We appreciate your ministry. I'm like, hey, it's your ministry. I get paid for what I do. You are the one that's sacrificing. And like Gail's sister one time, she was supporting us and she said, hey, I just want you to know what I do for you guys. She said, I decided I would take my salary from one day a month and give it to you guys. And so I choose a day and the money I make that day, she's a nurse. She said, I send you that money and I pray for you guys that day. And I thought, that's coined life there. She takes her life, she turns it into money, sends us the money, it buys our life. See? So she is going to get eternal reward for that. So, you know, I get paid for what I do. So that's awesome. Anyway, there's a grateful heart there. Number eight, freedom. This is huge. Freedom to pursue ministry in geographical or right places where no salary package exists. And, you know, one day someone came up to Max Parnett and said, Max, I'd really like to do campus ministry. Are there any campuses open? He goes, oh, yes, there are so many campuses open. And he listed off a bunch of campuses. And this guy graduated from seminary. He goes, well, wait a minute. I didn't know they were hiring people. He said, you know, is there someone hiring? He goes, oh, well, no, there's not a salary that anyone's going to pay you, but you can go there. They're open. And you can raise your support. And you can go there. That's a great campus. You can have tremendous ministry. And it's like, oh, well, oh, no, no. You know, I think I deserve a salary. Some things like that. So you know what? And so what, you know, Max said, well, you didn't really want to know if there's a campus open. You want to know if someone's willing to pay you a salary to go to a school. And so, you know, the greatest blessings are for those who are willing to trust God for their salary. And Max said one time, he said, if a guy is not willing to trust God for his salary, he has no business being in the ministry in the first place. Campus Crusade for Christ changed the face of ministry in this country when Bill Bright had this vision of fundraising. They were the great beginners, and a lot of people have followed. All of the fundraising that we do today, different campus ministries and organizations, came out of them. Number nine, a level of autonomy and freedom to do what God has called you to instead of carrying out an employer's request. I can make disciples at CU, and there was a time where people started putting pressure on me to start doing some other things. And a lot of times, you know, you'll see a guy at soft staff at a church. His job is campus ministry. And he starts getting pulled into all kinds of other things. And the campus is left. And people aren't working on the campus. It just happens sometimes. And you know what? If the church is paying your salary, then you got to do it, right? Because they're paying your salary. Well, me, I can, you know, when I started getting some pressure to do some other things, I said, hey, I have an obligation to my supporters. You're not paying me. You know, they're paying me to make disciples at the University of Colorado. So I could focus on what was the most important thing. So that's another one. Number 10 is built-in accountability from supporters. And the idea there is, you know, people aren't going to give money unless they think you're competent to do the ministry. So, and I've got some stuff written down there. I think accountability is important, and it needs to have, and I've got some stuff written there. I have number 11 there, bonus. God will bless the donors for their giving. And that's really giant. People are putting money into an they're getting eternal treasure in heaven. Luke 6:38 says, give and it'll be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. You know, with the measure you used, you will receive. So God blesses the donor for their giving. That stuff is geared to try to help you understand So much has to do with your attitude. You know, attitude is everything. And there's tremendous reasons. It's a tremendous thing. And again, it's been the greatest joy of campus ministry. Hey, I'll tell you a quick story here. So this is cool. So when I first went on staff, I knew my wife's dad wouldn't like it. You know, Billy Miller is a government man, and he went to the top of the system. He received Defense Department, the highest award, sometimes given by the president or the secretary of defense for work that he did. I knew he wouldn't like this thing of raising support, so I was ready for him. So anyway, so I go in and said, yeah, I'm going to take this job at OU, and you know, I'll have to raise my support. Raise your support? What's that? So I explained it to him. He's like, so let me get this straight. You have to, they want to hire you, but you have to pay your own salary. Is that right? So I was ready. I said, where do you get your money? He said, from the government? I said, well, where do they get it? He goes, what do you mean? I said, where does the government get their money? He said, from the taxes? From taxes? He goes, where do the taxes come from? He goes, from the people? I said, well, who are the people? He said, what are you getting at? I said, I'm the people. I have to support you. I support you. And I don't want to, but if I don't support you, they lock me up in jail because I don't pay my taxes. So I said, the people they give to my salary, no one has to do it. They only do it if they want to. But I have to pay your salary. I support you, but you don't have to support me. No one has to support me unless they want to. He goes, well, I can't comment on that. He said, because I was bringing his daughter back home to the area, so he was really happy about that. But anyway, I was ready for it. It was perfect. Yes. It was awesome. I hope he never listens to this tape. No. He passed away, so he probably won't listen to it. But anyway, everybody gets their support from somewhere. You know, you provide goods and services, and you get somehow people that care about those goods and services will help you. And the eternal rewards that will go to their account. You know, a lot of money in our culture that people spend doesn't give eternal rewards. The best money people may give is to you, really, in terms of in light of eternity. If you talk to someone about helping you with a mission trip or helping you with your salary, if you look at it from an eternal perspective, you are really helping them, because that's going into an eternal investment. And I'm very aware of that. And so that's why I love it. That's why I love it. Even though, you know, I'm not saying there aren't hard times. I'm not saying you have to trust God. I'm not saying there aren't times when maybe your support's low. But I've found God is always faithful. There's a verse I memorized as a young man, and it had to do with this area, but other areas too. And it's Psalm 37, 25 and 26. It says, I have been young, now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging for bread. All day long he is gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. And I remember memorizing that verse as a young man, and I said, Lord, I'm a young man. I said, I'm young, but someday I'm old and I'll be able to say whether this verse is true or not. Well, now I'm an old man, okay? And now I say, I have been young, now I'm old, and I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging for bread. All day long he's gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. And so it's so important that you, at this tender age that you all are, that you, the truths that you're receiving at this conference and that I'm sharing with you today, that you decide, I am going to be a man or woman who lives by faith. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds forth from the mouth of God. And that you are going to believe God. And there's a verse in Numbers 14. It says, your children whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they will enjoy the land that you have rejected. I thought that was very interesting in that passage. And I'm done preaching. Okay. So in that passage, though, it's like, you know, the children of Israel, they're supposed to believe God. God, it says, you can go into this land, and I will provide for you. Okay? Now, there are giants in the land. Okay? And or from an earthly standpoint, it doesn't make any sense to attack this land. But I've given this land to you. It's the promised land. So in every one of your lives, you have a promised land that God invites you to. And people will say, now, sweetheart, this is stupid for you to think about doing this. This doesn't make any sense. People will say that to you. People who And I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to people who try to give you some good advice, but there's a fine line between faith and foolishness, and the difference is the will of God. If it's God's will, he'll take you in. That seemed very foolish for these guys to go into the promised land when there are giants in the land. It seemed very foolish. But the will of God made it the right thing, and God was going to take them in. So later they're like, now God, here's the deal. We would go into the land and we would die if the giants killed us, but it's our little ones, we can't stand the idea of them dying. So we can't go in the land because they would become a prey. You know, the enemy would prey on them and kill them. God says later, he goes, your children whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in and they will enjoy the land that you have rejected. So all those people had to die in the wilderness. None of them could enter the land except the two that believed, Caleb and Joshua. They got to go in the land. I memorized that verse and I thought, you know, God, may I never be a man who doesn't believe you. You know, may I never be a man who doesn't believe you, but that I would believe you. Be a man who walks by faith and believes you. And I will just say that as I've lived my life, this has been true. God has blessed and honored. There's been some humility along the way, and that's been good for me. It's been good for me. I'm not some, you know, pastor in a large church in some things, maybe with some temptations and some things. I'd be afraid not to really follow God. It'd be so easy for him to deal with me, you know. Anyway, it's been really good for me personally. You will be the one, the most blessed. Raising support is a blessing. It's not a curse. Trying to help you see practically how to deal with this thing. Okay? At the bottom of the page here, moving from ambiguity to clarity in the process of raising support. Steps in making your decision about this situation. This is kind of like just practically my best idea on practical stuff. What does God think? Does this fit the vision he's given you? You have to decide that. So the big deal is, this is huge. The big deal is, okay, God, is this something you want me to do? Whatever this thing is, okay? You got to figure that out. And you have to know that this is something God is calling to you. And that's not optional. You can't waver. When I knew this deal, Luke 9:62 was a, man, I had that phone and I was going to make some calls at OU and I was scared, and I remember I literally took Luke 9:62 and put it on the wall in front of the phone. And Luke 9:62 says, no one after putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. I had made the decision. I need to move forward. Okay? So you have to know. You can't vacillate on if this is God's will for you. You have to know that. Okay? What does God think? Does this fit the vision he has given you? And along that line, what do others think? Seek counsel from key people in your life and authorities in the field. And what you're looking for is the peace of God. Okay, you have to have this subjective peace of God that this is something God is calling you to do. All right? And then, count the cost. Luke 14 says, which of you will build a house without counting the cost? Or go to war without counting the cost? So none of you can be my disciples unless you give up everything. And that Luke 14:25-33, I never invite someone to receive Jesus without sharing that passage with them. Because it's just a great passage to help them understand kind of what they're... There's going to be some hard times, right? That's the way it is. It's okay. You got to own that. And then make the plunge. And there's Luke 9:62. You must believe God is in this thing. You must believe that he wants you to reach these people through you. That is what you must believe. The number one thing, so here's a five thing, okay? One, number one, vision. There needs to be a vision. Without the vision, the people perish. Number two is humility. For me, I had to humble myself and be willing to invite people to partner with me. There's a humility to that. And guys, that's a lot of times the issue right there is use a spirit of pride, if you're like me, and you don't want to have to invite people. You think, man, I got this great degree. People, I'm worth a big salary. And I'm going to go beg these people for money or something like that. Yeah, God wants you to beg. That's awesome, you know. I mean, begging is humbling. And you don't really beg. That's not really what you do. But you know what I mean? If someone accuses you of being a beggar, just own it. Yeah, that's right. For Jesus, I'm going to beg for Jesus. No. Because it's really not about you, right? It's about the people you're going to reach. That's another thing. Think about the people that you're trying to reach. It's really about them. It's not about you, is it? It's not about you. And that's why, this is a little side note here. When you write your support, your newsletters, if you're ministering, don't say, you know, thank you for helping me provide for my family. Don't say that. They're not helping you provide for your family. They're helping advance the gospel at the University of Colorado. Man, I got a letter one time from a guy, and he said, he put on there, in fact, I may have it, it says, in partnership for the advancement of the gospel. Here it is, right here. Look at this. This is from Luke Samoff. In partnership for the advancement of the gospel at CU. This guy is a Wycliffe missionary today in Indonesia. And he had that with his check, in partnership. I thought, yeah, that's why he gives the money. He gives his money for the advancement of the gospel at CU. He doesn't give his money for me to provide for my family. And it was a great reminder. I kept it up at my desk for a long time. And it was like God is saying, Bobby, your job is to advance the gospel at the University of Colorado. Right? Faith, humility, and then number three is faith/trust/believe. And then number four, sacrifice/hard work. And then number five is provision. Next page, flip it over. Specific questions to answer. And this is kind of like a lot like this, the front part. Specific field, where is God calling you to go? Number two, what exactly is God calling you to do? Number three, specific promise. Okay, this is really cool. God often gives promises when he calls someone to a task. It usually involves a biblical verse or passage. Ask God to confirm his direction from his word, but do not force it. Pay attention in your quiet times. This promise will sustain you during dry times. I don't know if I have. No, I guess I didn't bring it. But I have like, it's interesting. I'd never received a promise from God. And when I decided to go on to do this thing, it's like all of a sudden, like I'd open my Bible and I just sensed God was giving me some promises, some very specific promises. So I wrote all those down and I have them and they're really special to me. There was a number of promises. And then there weren't any more promises for a while. It was like God was kind of just giving me what I needed. And it's really neat the way God does that. So you'll see this. So really, really ask God to give you some promises about this. Number four, minimum time frame. Long enough to sow, water, and reap. Often 2 years is a minimum for associate staff and 5 years for a ministry leader. There is no substitute for longevity. Number five, determine a salary and program needs. Put a dollar figure to this. So you need to get specific about what you want, okay? And then write all your resources on a single page. This is really helpful. A lot of times when people do this, it's really cool. You actually write down the names of all the people you can think of and try to do it on one page and begin to pray over it, over that page. You don't have to do it exactly this way. This is just one suggestion. But one of the deals I read suggested this way, and it said, pray over it, and then this is a little controversial, but place individuals in category according to the amount that you would like to see them give. And there, you just prayerfully consider, are they someone, maybe they're a fellow, they went to school with you, and you think, man, they're really struggling financially. I might ask them for $25 a month. Then there's someone else, and they're a businessman in town or something, and they're okay. They're maybe a professional person. You ask them. I might ask them for $100 a month. And you're not gonna. They don't necessarily. When you ask them, you say, "I was wondering if you could help me, with $100 a month towards my salary, to partner with us for that, or some other amount, if that would be better." But go ahead And because sometimes people send out these little cards and it's like, you know, I want to support you with prayer. They put that first. And second, giving $5, $10, $20. And somebody think, well, yeah, I could do $5, you know. And they could do 100 if you asked them for that. They really could. I remember one time, you know, at this seminar I'd gone to, I think it was this Funding Your Ministry by Scott Morton. I've gone to a lot of these kinds of things and taught them too. Anyway, they said, don't ask a church for less than $200 a month. Just don't even think about asking a church for less than $200 a month. They may not give that to you, but so I remember I had a church that I'd been a youth director at for a little while when I was teaching high school, and then a summer passed when I taught high school. So I went in there and talked with them, and I said, I'd really appreciate it if you could give me, I sucked all the air out of my room. I said, $200 a month would really help me. And he said, well, we'll get back to you. And so later they said, yeah, we'll do $200 a month. And then several years later they called back and said, hey, we're not doing $200 a month anymore. I said, listen, that's okay. He said, well, you know, we've decided to do $400 a month. And I thought, well, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. That's all right. I don't mind. You know, that changed. But they loved me. I tried to do a good job keeping up with them. They appreciated the ministry. And so they started helping me $400 a month. And they helped me all the time. I was at AOU, and they've helped me all the time that I've been in Colorado. So that's been really good. But if I hadn't asked for $200 a month, they probably would have given me less. So I'm glad that Scott Morton had given that advice. So I like this idea, because the idea is you got to quantify this whole thing of support rate. You got to quantify it. You got to try to get it down where you can wrap your mind around it. But you don't have to do that, but I think this is a good approach. As I've done that, I really have appreciated that. So students and low wage earners, 25 a month. Most people, 50. Professionals, 100. Some people can give more. Note, medical persons often prefer providing health and dental services. Medical people love to provide their services. It's so cool. I remember there'd been a guy that went to we struggled with medical bills when we were at OU. And then I went to Colorado and a guy joined our church and he said, who's your pediatrician? I said, well, we don't have one. He goes, well, I will be. I'm a pediatrician. I'll be your doctor. I'll see you, you know, for free. No problem. Just always bring your kids to me. Not long after that, he left Boulder, went back to the South, and a guy took over his business. I didn't even know if he was a Christian. And he said, his name was Dr. Buff. He said, I'll continue to do what Dr. Stevens had done. I'll see your kids. And I thought, really? And it kind of caught me off guard. Later, I wrote him a letter and said, Dr. Buff, I don't want you to feel pressure to do this, because Kelly Stevens went to our church and he did this, but I just don't want you to feel like you need to do this for our family. He called me up. He said, I'll do it if I want to. We started this wonderful relationship with Dr. Buff. We had a great ministry, I think, in his life, and he loved doing that. And it's interesting, all our kids, we have 8 kids, so they all are like, they put all the family in one chart. So our chart was like bigger than all the other charts. And he'd open it up, and on that first page was always that letter that I'd written to him about, you don't need to do this. And I think he appreciated me not being presumptuous. But I knew he liked doing that. And a lot of times medical people, and our dentist does that too, medical people like to provide services. I had my dentist went back in Oklahoma. He had said, Bobby, I'll help you. I'll either give you $20 a month, or I will see you and your family for free doing your dental work. And I thought about that for about a quarter of a second, maybe less. I said, I'll take the dental work. And that was great, right? One time I wrote him a thank you note. Thank you for putting your money where my mouth is. You like that? A little takeoff on a phrase there. Yeah. Put your money where your mouth is. Okay. Anyway. All right. Where am I at here? Okay, talking to people. I strive for face-to-face appointments, make appointments primarily relational. A lot of times support rate, you know, it's a relationship. It's not like you go and you have to tell them. They want a relationship with you. People appreciate a relationship. And support raising is primarily relational. Unless it's in a business person who has a lot, who gives to a lot of ministries. You don't always really need to go into great detail about your organization. People normally believe in you, not your organization, when you talk to them. I mean, what you're doing is good, but they believe in you. So when you call us at an appointment, let them know what you want. Full disclosure might be something like this. God has called me to go to State College to evangelize and disciple college students. I'd like to set an appointment to share my vision with you and give you the opportunity to pray about partnering with me in this calling through prayer and a monthly financial investment. My visit won't obligate you, but God may or may not leave you to give. But I'd really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about my calling to State College. You know, you maybe not say it all in one sentence like that. But you got to be specific. I remember that, you know, this church that ended up helping me $200 a month. I remember I was sweating profusely and I called on the phone and I was talking to this guy. He was I needed to talk to the chairman of the mission committee, right? So I call him up and he's like, well, he's out mowing the lawn. Let me go get him. I'm like, oh no, don't go get him. It's okay. I'll call later, but it was too late. So he comes in. Yeah. Hello. Hey, I know you're head of the mission committee. Yeah. Well, I'm Bobby Pruitt. You know, I used to be youth director there. And I talked and talked, and finally he said, what do you want? What do you want? You know, why are you calling me? Is what he was saying. And I thought, oh yeah, well, it's really this thing when you raise support. It's really hard to actually get down to telling people what you want. So I let you know from my failure. Let people know what you want from them. Try to say that fairly soon in the conversation. And try to actually ask them, because there's a tendency to talk about everything in the world, but letting them know what you want. Keep that in mind. Let them know what you want and how they can be a part of what you're doing. They can have a ministry at State College through you. You are going to be there. You need people to partner with you. The partner word is huge. They're your partners. Partners. I don't even like the term support raising. I don't even like that. So it's a partnership development, maybe, right? That's much better. But you need some partners, some financial partners, and you'll get people that they love to join your team, and they feel like they're having a ministry there, and they are. And you let them know how much you appreciate in the ministry you're having. It's awesome. Other tips: people usually give because they believe in you, not your calling, not because of the specific mission. They want to be part of what God is doing. Giving is first and foremost relational, not task-oriented. Keep up with your donors. Help them know they're a key part of the ministry. Number three, it's difficult for people to make financial decisions. They tend to procrastinate. There's always more demand for their finances than supply. So give them decision deadlines and follow-up. Crusade, I know, they try to get people to write the first check before they leave that appointment. They invite them. They don't say, hey, pray about partnering with us. I'll call you up again later. They want, it's like, do you want to do this? Could you go ahead and give me the first check right now? Go get your checkbook and bring it in here and write it. You know, they really encourage people because it's hard to make financial decisions. It's hard for me. It's hard for everybody to make financial decisions. So you got to help people to move through the difficulty of making financial decisions. Okay. All right. And then maintain an attitude of believing God to give you success in support raising in spite of Satan's darts of doubt. Faithful is he who calls you, and he will bring it to pass. So you have to have this attitude of believing God. And then for some people, like who are introverts, and you know, I'm like naturally a promoter by nature, right? That's my kind of extroverted, and I'm a promoter, and I kind of get excited about this kind of stuff, in case you haven't figured that out. But some people, they're not that way at all. But some people you talk to will be like me. They'll be excited. They'll be so excited, and you'll just notice. You got to kind of keep your antennas up. They'll be excited about helping you reach your financial goals. Okay, they're champions. They're your champions. Okay, the champions go out and fight for you. Okay, and some people can get really excited about this. And God may provide those. So try to be aware. And they're saying, hey, how's the support raising going? And you'll just get the idea that that person's really excited for you doing this. And pray about how that person might be able to help you in your support raising. Okay? Maybe it's a parent of yours. Maybe it's a friend of yours. Or sometimes an older gentleman will see a younger guy or something, and he's a guy who's established, and older guys sometimes, they just get tremendous satisfaction in really helping a younger guy to be successful. Tremendous deep personal satisfaction in that. right? So look out for that and watch for people who might be willing to help you. And people do things like they'll throw a party and invite their friends so you can do your presentation. That's a great thing to do. And there's stuff like that. All right. Okay. I've got a lot of other stuff, but I'll stop for now. We've got a few minutes for questions. Go ahead. What questions do you guys have about this? Question. Well, if you're going to do the ministry, then you need to be able to take care of your family. So, indirectly, your family needs are ministry needs, because the ministry needs a director who can take care of his family. So that ministry, so part of the ministry need is for a director to be able to provide for his family. So the family needs are ministry needs. It's just that people don't give. That's part of it, but it's kind of like if you're at war. You know, in World War II, we got to beat the Germans. We can beat the Germans. It's not like, give money because we've got to pay for this tank, or I don't know, you know, or we got all these people that need to eat. It's more we keep the vision in front of them. But it is, there's the same thing. Oh, got it. Line on. God, I see what you're saying now. Yeah. Yeah, you keep a program budget separate from your family's salary budget. You keep those things separate. And we have a Friday night thing, and we have like maybe 40 or 50 people over. We don't have any money for that. We pay it ourselves because we love to do it as a family. So I don't know, you know, sometimes you, we're some of our best donors, you know. So it kind of runs together that way, but anyway. So, but you have a separate line item. Yeah, you just keep your program budget. I have a separate check, you know, separate line items. So there's one like basic salary, and then I have my housing. Because I'm an ordained minister, I can deduct that from my tax, from certain taxes. And then there's, you know, auto expenses and some things. And then like program budget, there's some line items over there that are different. Okay, more questions? I know there's like some big things like you think. Oh, go ahead.
So for raising support for like Project Impact, right, where it's one summer, it's one thing you don't need ongoing. Mm-hmm. How do we set that up?
At the GoProjectImpact.com website, they have a sample letter. You basically write a letter to as many people as you can think of. And you may want to kind of like, you know, one thing you do, I should have said this, but you got to kind of check sometimes with maybe your folks or your wife or something like that and say, hey, is it okay to send a letter to these guys? And like my wife's like, don't send anything to anybody in my family because they don't get it and they would be offended. So we didn't do much with Gail's family. My father, on the other hand, he said, you ask my brothers, you ask them. I want them to, you know, make them say no to you because they should give. And you put the heat on, you know, put the squeeze on them because there's nothing better they can do. So it was very different attitudes. You know, Gail's family, they want to help us. They didn't want to know about it. They're not interested. They don't want to know. They don't, you know, they just don't even talk about it. You know, don't bring it up. So that's kind of, it's how I've always felt their attitudes are. So I'm not saying, you know, because sometimes you see, don't make decisions for other people on whether they should give. Generally, that's a good rule, okay? There's your side of the table and their side of the table. You ask them, and it's their decision on whether they'll help you or not. Don't make their decision on whether they're going to help you. Let them make their decision. So you write a letter and invite people and kind of do that as broadly as possible with some sensitivity based on, say, what your parents say. You have to get permission from your folks to write your aunt and uncle and stuff like that, I think. But generally, try not to, I don't know if they would give to me, so I don't know if I'll write them a letter. Just let them decide. Just write them a letter kind of thing. And you write a letter, and you make sure your letter is very clear about what you want from them. Okay, here's, I'm going on this mission trip to this place. Most people know that these mission trips sometimes you take, you're probably not going to, thousands of people are going to come to know Jesus and stuff like that. It's you know what? People give to trips. Somebody goes on a soccer team. They're going to go oversee some soccer camp You know, people will give to a soccer thing. People will give. That's the way America is. People are invited to give, and people make decisions. It's the way our culture is. And what you're doing is at least as important as a soccer camp. So just write them a letter and invite them to partner with you. A lot of your short-term trips, you'll probably get more from them than you'll actually give in terms of production on the field. That's okay. That's part of the deal. You know, they're investing in you. You pay college tuition. It costs money. People give. People give to things. So I don't know if that helps, but you write a letter and be very specific about what you want. One page only. Don't make it too long. Let them know. You'll call them up. You're going to call them in, and let them know when you're going to call them and ask them about that. And when you call, they're going to say, oh, yeah, well, we haven't made a decision about that yet. And you'll be shocked. Wait, what do you mean? This is such a big deal to me. They forgot. They haven't read it. So don't expect them to really have read your letter and been praying over that letter. They won't. They won't have even read it. Or, oh, yeah, what was that again? They'll say, what was that again? And you'll have to be ready because you have to tell them all over again. Because that's, you know, they have other things in their life. Besides, it's a big thing to you, but not to them. And they get lots of requests. If you can talk to people in person, that's great. But a lot of times for a project, you know, you write letters, let them know, and then call them up and see if they're people willing to help you.
What's being almost like? How do you find the line between being almost too pushy or I don't know what another word for it? Not demanding, but like, because obviously you can be like, oh, just like give what you want. But you know what I'm saying? Like, is there a line you're too timid? Yeah, exactly.
That's not really an issue. You just let them know what you're doing and invite and say, is this something you'd like to be a part of? And then be quiet. Be quiet. Okay, because there's a tendency you want to keep talking, but just be quiet. Let them respond. Think about it and respond. And they may say, well, I guess I need to think about this a little more. Or, I don't think we can. But it's hard to be quiet and let them respond. But you don't, you know what I mean? You don't have to keep asking, let me tell you. You don't need to be, there's no reason to be pushy. You just say it and give them a chance. And there's no need to ever be pushy about it that I can imagine. Yeah. The main thing is your job is to be clear about what you want and what you need. Right, and that's what I mean. What you need, what you want, yeah. What to, for this, and how they can, and help them understand how they can partner and be a part of it. Yeah, what you're asking them. Okay, be clear on that. And face to face is always best. And I remember one time Max was talking. He goes, look at this. Here's a stack of requests. People want money for this, that, and the other. He said, I can't give to all these things. He goes, but I'll tell you what. He opens a stack and he goes, see this one here? This guy, if he walked in that door right now and asked me to help him, I would. If he walked in that door right now and asked me. Because he took the time to personally talk to me. And there's something about that personal connection. And I felt that. Man, I'm just about to give to a crusade couple. They came over and talked to our family. And I don't know if I will or not, but I'm really close. Just because they've done a great job. And I probably would send them just maybe a small one-time gift. But I just appreciated them coming to our house and talking to us and sitting with us. And then they send their newsletter. They're in Russia. They send their newsletter every month. You know, someone in the States mails it. They always encourage, too, like real letters, even though they're expensive, not email. Although I think the younger generation are okay with email. That's why most of the younger people do it, because letters are really expensive. But if you go to support raising seminars, they'll say hard copy, hard copy, hard copy. You know, that's what they say is to do. And that is, that's something to really think hard about. But anyway, yeah. Other questions?
I know that, you know, part of the process is just the dealing with projection, but what about when it's someone that you really respect a lot, someone they they either don't give you anything or they don't give you very much? I mean, has that ever been an issue where you kind of felt like, this is going to damage our relationship now because I don't feel like they really supported my ministry?
That's a toughie. Because you'll feel that people that you're, especially loyal types of people, you feel like, man, I really care about this friend, or people that have fewer friends, but they deeply care about their friends. And you know this person could give a lot. And yet here they're just, they're just barely helping you or something like that. That's why this thing of inviting people that I mentioned earlier at a certain level is really important. It can really be helpful that way. I think that's where you personally just have to deal with your attitude before God and decide that's not going to be a barrier in your relationship. It does say something about their heart, so that might be a prayer request. But it's hard. It's hard because it's hard not to take rejection personally. That's just hard. Yeah. Other questions? Time's up. Let me close in prayer. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you guys have too. Thank you, God. We love you. We really are grateful. I thank you for these students and others, Lord, who are willing to trust you and are considering. Oh, God, I just can't imagine the increase of ministry we could have. And I think about how many things people give money to in this culture, and many of those things are... I talked to a multi-million dollar lawyer recently, and he has given all his money to the Humane Society to help pets. And I just think, well, those animals are good, but you know what? I wish he had a higher view of how he wanted to invest the wealth that you've given him. People give to so many things. I just pray that you'd work in each person's heart in this room, that they could see clearly the way you see about the tremendous blessing that we give to people by giving, by talking to them about and helping them to make eternal investments with their money. And even sacrificial investments, you bless sacrificial giving too. And sometimes we don't want to go to people who don't have very much, and that is a real mistake, Lord. So we just ask you to work mightily to give us your wisdom. And then would you provide for us? We really look to you. Vertical is giving is vertical. And so thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, one last quickie. So I have this old grandmother, Abuelita, my Spanish grandmother. And my mom would give her, at the end of a time we'd stay with her in Florida, my mom would give her some money. Here, mommy. And she'd go, oh, no, my dear. Oh, no. And then, oh, mommy, you take it. You take it. So my precious, godly Abuelita would take the money. She'd take the money and she'd go, gracias Dios, gracias Dios. And I thought, as a kid, I thought, how come she's thanking God when my mother just gave her the money? And it's because she understood something that I didn't understand, that when people give money, they're giving to God first, right? They're really giving to God. That's their way of giving to God. So this is sacred money, sacred money used for his kingdom. Yeah.